Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, 11-6-2018, Election Day.
Yeah, how exciting is this?
Oh, it's so exciting. I can't think of anything more exciting.
They've hyped it up pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's some serious...
It's because it turns out they can make money. The networks can make tons of money by hyping it up and talking about Trump.
Well, I'm pretty tired of it, and we'll get to some of the things that I've seen happening over the last week. I have so many people complaining to me about the amount of texts they're getting, but I'll talk about that in a second. But let's start off with our usual market update. Why don't we? Last week, there was a nice bounce. Some are questioning whether it's a dead cat bounce or whether it's something here to stay. But there was a nice move from a deeply oversold position. You know, we saw that remember all those charts I gave you? You got three standard deviations from the 50-day moving average for this one.
Yeah, that was very, great. Very entertaining.
Yeah. So, I mean, we did see that was something that wasn't sustainable, that selling pressure that happened. And there was a return. We saw S&P up 2.5% last week. Small caps were up 4%. The NASDAQ moved higher by, 2.7%. Emerging markets were up 6%. So I was wondering why. You know, what was going on?
Why?
Well, we talked about these oversold levels like we just talked about. We talked about, this was unbelievable last week. The on and off potential for a trade deal with China. Did you follow all that was going on?
No.
So we saw that Larry Kudlow would come out and say, well, it's not looking so good, but if something's going to happen, maybe we'll have something, a talk at the G20. Then there was some confirmation about a phone call that I think President Trump initiated to President Xi in China. And then markets flew up on that. And then they came back a little bit, but then President Xi confirmed that they had the conversation. Like there's a need to have backup for when Trump says something, right?
Yeah.
I guess.
But I could be making it up.
Yeah. So then somebody else came out and said that no, there's no trade deal. That there was something about it. Behind the scenes, several people in the White House administration had said that there was that they're working on a plan to present kind of like a framework, if you will. And then that was like booted as not happening. And then somebody else came out and said, well, if we don't do it by the G20, probably not going to be for a while. All over the place. It's crazy. And then on Friday, last minute, there was more discussion again about how they're looking forward to this meeting with Xi in, I guess, the end of November at the G20 meeting. So markets were bouncing and dancing and doing all sorts of things on all that news. And then the other thing was that we have buybacks that could have been restarted after the blackout period.
Yeah.
But the one thing out of all the things, and I think the hope for a deal with China is really something that's very important to markets. There's no question about that. The trade deals are overwhelming market participants right now. This playing with their emotions by coming out with all this nonsense throughout the week, I think was totally just only for the benefit of bringing up markets into the midterm elections.
Could be. Well, it worked, at least today.
Exactly. So, you know, Friday we bounced down again after really good. We had, as I'm calling it, goobad news. That's a combination of the old good is good and bad is maybe good, but could be also bad. And the bad news was that we saw employment numbers come out at 250,000 new jobs added to the payrolls, and expectations were only 190,000. So the job market is definitely on fire.
Seems so.
Yeah, and that's going to probably keep the Fed on their tightening path, you would think. And that's what markets seem to project on Friday after the initial back and forth about China, and then when the whole employment numbers really sank in that, oh, man. The Fed is not going to back off here. They can't back off. And now we're seeing this all sorts of, you know, we've talked about how tight the labor market is. And now companies are, there's a couple companies that are shutting down operations because they can't find enough labor. I don't understand this at all.
That doesn't make sense.
Did you see these stories?
There's plenty of people out there. Just pay them a buck more.
Not only is there plenty of people out there, but if you can't find, if you're running for 5 days and you have, you know, you're filled up and you have all these orders coming in, why would you shut down? Just have your people work more hours. Doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
No, I know. So there's a chart there on the payroll numbers. We see that the increase was, I mean, we've seen some good numbers. I mean, we've seen 300,000 in the beginning of this year. We've seen above 270 in May. It's almost like every other month or so, we see a big spike and then a little bit of a drop down, a big spike and a drop down. But the average is about 215,000 new jobs added when you look at a 6 month moving average. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's great. It's over the number you're looking for.
Yeah. So I think somebody was, I think it was Goldman Sachs today. They were saying that they expect a 3% unemployment rate in like the next 2 years, down to 3%.
Well, we know it's a bogus number, so we can discuss it or not, but I'm not buying it.
But don't you think that whether it's bogus or not, the fact is more people are being, forget the percentage, forget the unemployment rate. The fact that people are being added to the payrolls is good. Can't argue
absolutely.
That. And
that's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and that's going to lead to more wage pressure, don't you think?
I would hope. Well, yeah, because apparently the homeless ranks aren't looking for work, or they can't get work, or they never will. I don't know. I just find it screwy that in San Francisco you have this, you know, this boom, and you have the one of the biggest homeless populations. I mean, it's kind of like, what's wrong with this picture?
What is wrong with the picture?
I don't know. I mean, something's wrong with it. I have no idea what's wrong with it.
Are they homeless friendly? That's what it is.
Well, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, there's a modicum of that because they're all Democrats and they have to be that way because you have to be that way if you're a Democrat.
You have to be homeless friendly?
Yeah.
You have to be.
But
it's part of the Democratic code.
Yeah. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think anyone's going to prove me wrong.
Well, you know, it's interesting because
I mean, I live in the area. I get some feeling for it.
Well, we have a homeless problem here and we're starting to see more and more homeless people start to emerge. And it's usually somewhat to do with weather, because if you have the opportunity to live, come down to Florida, at least south from the northern part of Florida, from Georgia, from anywhere else that they are, and the weather is better during the winter, you may see some more. Obviously, it's not like there's a migration necessarily, but there may be more. But the other thing is that the word is getting out that the city is looking to build buildings with apartments that they'll allow for the homeless people to get at very low or no cost.
Yeah, well, that would be an enticement.
Yeah. But it's not as bad as your situation. I mean, is it only the homeless problem, or is it also the cars, people living in their cars in San Francisco that are very apparent?
Oh, the latest thing going on, I should be taking pictures of this. I'm not sure why I'm being remiss. But the biggest problem right now, and it's not just San Francisco, it's the whole Bay Area, are people are buying or somehow getting a hold of, or I don't know the story behind too much of it. I'm going to actually talk to some people that are in these things. Buying RVs, and big ones. A lot of them are those bus-sized RVs that are really old, just like, you know, will it even start kind of RVs. And they're parking them up and down numerous streets. So there's whole neighborhoods with these lines of RV. I gotta get some photos. It's because
it doesn't matter if the engines work. It's like having a boat that you live on without an engine.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're dealing with, I think, with a lot of these, and in Berkeley mostly. And they don't seem to have any. Berkeley's got a lot of homeless encampments. They've had them for years. They got one or two of them that they can't really even approach. They're very well organized homeless, and these trailers and RVs are just, there's two or three streets where there's probably 200 or 300 of them, and there's just people living in them, and that's, as far as they're concerned, is good enough. So it's a house, and in fact, the big ones, I think, is good enough if you were parked legally, but I don't know what they're going to do about
this.
It's
interesting that you mentioned that they're very well organized, because I've been doing some studies. I'm on a few different boards. And one of the issues that brought up during a discussion with an explanation is there's a whole social hierarchy, almost like a mini government within the homeless areas. And it's like, you know, you have clearly people that are the leaders and the other people that they set the, you know, where you can be, the rules of the.
Yes, this wouldn't surprise me. This is very much this is how it starts. This eventually evolves into what you have in Brazil with the favelas on the some of the best real estate in Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo. And they're all self-governed.
Yeah. You basically don't mess with them. It's kind of like you just don't get involved with them too harshly, because they're like, I don't mean this in a negative way, but they're like a gang. They're like a tribe. That would be good. A self-governing tribe that's very proud, by the way, of their, you know, I'm a South Fort Lauderdale homeless member of the tribe. Seriously. I'm not dissing them. I'm not making fun of them. I'm saying it seriously. They have this very hardcore understanding of the rules of their encampment.
Well, that doesn't surprise. Not surprised in the least. Well, I can see pride. Why not? People love to have something to be proud of.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about the elections a little bit. There's a question about what's going to happen with the markets. What's going to be the direction of the markets, the election direction, if you will, and on the outcome. So the whole scuttlebutt is, well, if the Democrats win, take back the House, the majority in the House, well, we're going to probably see what? Gridlock. We're going to see the potential for...
Which might be good.
Gridlock has been good because the less Congress does... We've talked about this. The less Congress does...
It's always been my belief. The less the government does, the better off you are.
Yeah.
Having worked in the government, I can attest to this.
So that could be a good thing. On the other hand, if the Democrats take back the House, they may be just so overwhelmingly desirous of impeachment. They won't be able to focus on anything else but that.
Well, that's since it's a impossibility to go. It wouldn't go anywhere, and the likelihood of it, people, members of the House, especially with the 2020 election coming up, the likelihood of too many members of the House that are in districts where it's actually competitive, Democrats, where it might be competitive, they can't risk getting on that bandwagon. For the 2020 election, which looks like it'd probably be won once again by Trump, because there's no candidate to take him on except Hillary.
Oh, she's not running again.
Sure she is.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Harold Stassen ran 3 times.
I can't imagine after all that she went through and all that. I feel that she should be very happy with the fact that she came out of it relatively unscathed. From a legal standpoint, it could have been much worse for her. And you think
that's
she's going to
open probably up? Probably the way she's. That's probably one of the reasons she thinks she should run again. Oh. Look how I come out smelling like a rose, no matter what I do. I'm running again. I'm telling you, she's going to run again. She's got the machinery. She's got the machinery in place. It's still there. It hasn't been dismantled. The election machinery. She has the. She can get money. She has no problem doing that. Women love her. The same women that, you know, that voted for her in the first place. The minority communities will vote for her again. I think she'd be crazy not to run again. I'd be stunned.
We have Donna Shalala, who is supposedly winning her seat.
Yeah, she's going to win.
And she was embroiled in all sorts of election shenanigans.
Oh, yeah. She's very sketchy.
Yeah.
A lot of sketchy people in Florida.
Yep. Yeah. I'll second that. Now, if the Republicans keep the House, obviously the same old, nothing changes, and we kind of move along with whatever's been going on, and we can kind of get past that. Maybe more fiscal stimulus.
Yeah.
On the other hand,
I'll actually be stunned if they win the House.
The Republicans?
Yeah. Because it's an off year. They're always the switchover. It took place with Obama. It took place with Bush. Everybody. It happens with Eric Clinton. It's not an unusual thing to lose the midterms. So I would, if they lose the midterms, if the Democrats lose these midterms, they're in serious trouble as a party.
I would agree with that. That's exactly what I was thinking, that if, again, all this stuff that's being predicted in the polls and CNN and MSNBC and all these guys that are just, they're crazy with their, it looks like this is going to be the case, and they're doing, I watched a little CNN tonight. I want to see kind of what was going on between all the channels. And I cannot tell you how many times that during the process, they said, it's very early yet. We don't know if this is going to be the actual result, but it looks like it's going this way. But it's very early. They kept saying it's very early, you know, just hedging themselves because they know how off they were last time. I mean, it's a little bit different this time. There's no, the difference is it's a popular vote now, right? We don't have the Electoral College issue coming up with the midterms. So,
yeah, but there's still the Senate, you know, well, the Senate, they're not going to take, I don't think it'd be that I'd be surprised by.
I agree.
But these little, you know, they have a lot of women running and they're, you know, there's a lot of old guard running and nobody likes them. And I'd be surprised if the Democrats can't take the House. It will screw things up. And you're probably right about the impeachment thing. That'll come up. At least some people think it's going to be a possibility. But I think the Democrats' strategy, I've always believed this, was really to talk a lot about impeachment and make sure you never do it so you can always have Trump as a target during an election. Mm. And if you got him out of there, what would you be doing?
Yeah. No scapegoat, no target. So the other thing about if Republicans keep the House, so if Republicans keep the House, keep the Senate, everything stays the way it is now, I think there is potential for more pressure on China. Because now Trump will be, you know, feel that he's invincible and that he'll have all this backing because nobody stopped him. Nobody said anything, even though they've squawked and ranted and, you know, kind of got all, you know, teary eyed about the whole thing. But he may feel that, well, you know what? This is a referendum on my presidency, this election. And Republicans kept the House. Republicans kept the Senate.
Oh, he's definitely going to. Yeah. If they keep the House and Senate, it's going to be, he's going to be crowing.
Yeah, exactly. Me. So the thing that I was mentioning earlier was that I have several friends that have been complaining to me for the last couple of weeks that they've been getting just overwhelmed with these robotexts, these automated texting bots that are coming into their phones. Huh. And I said, I haven't gotten any, not one, you know,
I haven't gotten any.
I heard someone that works in my office.
It's got to be one of the carriers.
He's on. Let me think about that.
Sold their customers down the river.
I think you want to know what I think. They were all Republican, by the way, all GOP. Hmm. There was like 5 or 6 a day. I saw them. He said, look, it's right here. I said, I have not gotten one. And I think he's on the same carriers that I'm on, AT&T. But I was wondering, maybe, do you think either that happened or, remember, you know, the little presidential alert system that was tested? Maybe somebody got the numbers that way?
I don't think so.
No? Crazy theory.
You would have gotten one then. You would have gotten some texts.
That's true. It's a good point. So let's.
You should when you get to one of these guys complaining, make sure to ask what the carrier is. Because I'll bet you the carrier, even though you think they're both AT&T, they might not be. One guy might be Verizon. You don't know.
Right. And they keep on switching the phone number so you can't block the phone number.
Oh, yeah. I hate that.
Love it. So the prediction is, here's the prediction. This is what people are talking about. This is Tom Petterfy, who is, actually, I didn't know this. He's the richest man in Florida. He's the founder of Interactive Brokers.
Oh, okay.
And he says that if, in fact, the Democrats take the House and the Senate,
no, that's not going to happen.
The markets could tumble as much as 15%.
Yeah. I believe that's probably true.
If the Democrats take the House, he said the market could fall 2 to 3%. Now, also, he said either way, he's buying. No matter what happens, he's buying. If everything stays the same, he's buying because then we have good values and fiscal stimulus. If the Democrats get in and there is a sell-off that's steep, he's buying. If there's a slight sell-off, he's buying too. So I'm not sure.
So he's a net buyer.
He's a net buyer no matter what happens. I mean, I guess if who knows? No matter what happens, he seems to be a buyer. Why not? I think he's worth like $26 billion.
Well, he's got more money than we do, but maybe he should go to work for CNBC. That's where those guys love those guys.
Yeah. So I pulled up last part of this discussion about politics related to markets, because there's a politics related to markets discussion for all you people out there that are going to be like, oh, you guys talking about politics. We reserve that. They reserve that. John reserves that for the No Agenda show. Not really politically motivated, but yet politically outing. Finding out to getting to the bottom, deconstructing all the things that are going on. Very centered on political themes, because there's so many of them. That's on Thursdays and Sundays.
Yeah, the political thing should start to drift back down to normal after these elections. We'll be talking about the elections, obviously, on Thursday. But after that, I think it's going to be more international news.
Oh, that's good. But there's some interesting cycles that I pulled up for you, because I know you love cycles.
I do.
I know. And here's the four-year presidential market cycle. This is a chart that we put on the show notes on episode number 430. Go over to the show page, show notes page, over on dhunplug.com, and you can see this. Just click on the one that says pres cycles. But this is going back from the presidential cycles, the four-year cycle, going back to 28 through
1928.
Yeah. You see that chart?
Yeah.
So what it shows is year one of the president, year two, year three, year four. Now, there's also other charts you can look at, like, for example, same kind of thing, but a second term president, right? You know, a rehire, if you will. And you could go and just look at only, you know, the first year presidents that didn't get elected, that turned over. There's all sorts of different ways to look at this. But this is simply the four-year presidential cycle. And it shows in year one, the average stock market move that is based on, you know, a broad index, the average annual return in the first year of the presidency is about 4.5%. Second year, about 4%. So right now, the first year is low for this particular president. Comparatively, let me rephrase that. Stop, cut that. Let me say it again. The first year chart is low. Under President Trump, the return was much higher in the first year. So he has a much better lead. The second year, he's right on so far. Now, year three of the presidential cycle is where it gets interesting. The average, I couldn't believe this. The average is like almost 14%. Does that sound right of the third year? Why not just invest in the third year?
Yeah. My opinion is you just invest in stocks that are going to double in price. That's why don't you just do that?
Right. See, now that makes a lot of sense to me. Good theory. But what you look at this is we're talking about almost a 14% rate of return in the third year of the presidential cycle, which we're going to come into. When is that? It's now, right? Starting now.
It will become, yes, right after tomorrow it starts.
Yep, starts. And the fourth year. Now, I think this has to do with a lot of the campaigning that comes into play going into the hope for re-election, pushing the agenda, or possibly even a consideration if that president is not going to be in office again because their 8 years are up, and the next person hoping that there's going to be something better. You know, there's a lot of campaigning that goes on that third year. It starts up again for the next round of elections. I don't know. This chart looks a little bit wonky to me.
Well, it doesn't. I mean, it's maybe, I don't know. I'd have to look at the numbers behind it because there are instances where it was a down market during the Herbert Hoover after the market crash in 29, which I think was his third year or fourth year or third probably. And I'm sure that this would be down. So that thing would be reversed out. But that's only happens every so often. It's most of the time the market's going up, but it does go down.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, I have no idea because I've never seen these charts before. I'll study them.
Yeah, we should find out more. All right, let's get into some market information. This was some fascinating stuff, I thought, at least last week, about Apple. So Apple came out with their earnings, and they actually warned on sales for the holiday quarter. They said it's going to miss expectations. Now, when Apple talks about their earnings, you know, they had some good numbers and all that. When they talk about their earnings, a lot of times they sandbag. They lower expectations, you know, they try to keep everybody calm, and they beat them on the back end. It happened so many times, I can't even begin to.
Yeah, they always sandbag. Oh, the tech companies learned to sandbag years ago.
Yeah. So they said they expect between $89 and $93 billion in revenue for the first quarter ending in December, with a midpoint about $91 billion, which was below Wall Street expectations of $93 billion. So about $2 billion short of what they said they're going to potentially be doing, but who knows? But the big issue that happened and why the stock dropped, at least from what I can see, was that they announced something really strange. They announced that they're no longer going to be updating us in the conference calls and in their reports on a quarterly basis with unit sales information for the iPhone, the iPad, and Macs. You know, each, you know, they say, ah, we sold, you know, 59 million phones and we sold 22 million iPads and whatever the numbers are for the Macs. They're not going to be doing that anymore.
Yeah, I found that to be discouraging.
Why would somebody do that?
Why would a company do that? I think one reason, I would just put it on the Apple Watch. That's one reason. You got that turkey to deal with. Maybe Mac sales are down. Yeah, I don't know.
It's not good, right? You can't say that.
Nobody thinks it's good.
Apple's doing because they're
numbers just going to give us totals.
Right. It's not because they're going to blow things out. But they said that unit sales are becoming less relevant as customers buy bundled products that include subscriptions like Apple Music. So why
that's
can't
a bogus excuse?
Totally bogus.
They're going to buy that. They're going to buy, you know, bundle anyway.
They're going to bundle anyway.
They've always been bundling stuff.
Right. And why not? And why not provide us with the data for the iPhones, the iPads, and Macs, and the subscription-based information? Why not just be fully transparent?
Something's up.
Yep. So the market cap slid below $1 trillion. And then on Monday, well, and the other problem that this has is that the people that look to generate things like margin per phone, look at projecting the sales and what's happening through the pipeline, if they don't have these numbers, they can't do proper projections. So therefore, the analysts are cut off a bit. Mm. So on Monday, they also announced they're cutting production on some of their new XR models already. And that took a beating on many of the suppliers. Stock slid on the news. It was below, I think it was about, on Monday, I think it closed at about 200, but it was at 198 for a while. So that's down from, what, 240?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. Now, Tesla, there was some interesting news on that, too. You know, some of the big company news today. Tesla booked $189 million in automotive regulatory credit in its third quarter. This is like news after the fact. After their earnings came out, seemingly this was not in a lot of that, but there was a secondary disclosure that came out. And the company said that that $189 million helped contribute to their profitability, which makes sense. So they disclosed that they had a $52 million zero emission vehicle credit sales, but the quarterly filings include all regulatory credits, including this. So they, in other words, they disclosed the $52 million, but they didn't tell you the full extent of it all. So the higher gross margins that exceeded their guidance were also helped by these credits, which potentially are not there forever. So 44% of Tesla's net profit was attributable to previously undisclosed regulatory credits.
Yeah, sounds right.
So that didn't seem to bother
anybody.
Anybody, no. But it's just one more little gotcha from the company.
No, there's everything they're banking too much on, you know, free money.
But that's been his model the whole time. In this
oh yeah,
Tesla.
No, it was his model with SolarCity, and he couldn't keep it up though.
Mm-hmm. Do you know anybody that got those roof tiles? Have you seen them?
They came around once around the neighborhood. I know they said, well, are we going to have neighbors? They're going to be putting this stuff up. It was a great, interesting sales pitch. You got two guys coming over and they're warning me that there's going to be a lot of roofing action going on in the neighborhood because everyone is getting these solar panels. And I just want to let you know that we're going to be doing these panels. A next door neighbor and who else, and then they said we'd like to tell you a little bit about what we're doing. It's like they like easy into a very soft sell. I thought it was very very professional, and leave some literature or something. There's not one person that had a solar system put in. Not one. There's not one in the entire neighborhood that I looked around. I haven't seen any. I don't know that they're doing. I didn't think they were doing. I said, this is not. I don't know. And I don't like the idea of somebody else owning my roof. Just for some reason, it just doesn't work for me.
Was it like one of the the sales pitches from the roving meat purveyors that say that they have extra meat because they're...
I've only run into those guys once. The roving meat guy. Yeah, I got a guy comes to the door, the roving meat guy. And, you know, we buy meat off the hoof a lot. I mean, we buy lamb and we buy pork, we buy beef, we buy grass-fed. We know how to get it from the farmers. And then we know where the butchers are that you send this stuff to, and they carve it up for you, and they do a professional job, and it comes in very inexpensively. You sometimes maybe get too much hamburger, but the hamburger is delicious. So I know what the prices are supposed to be per pound. And so these guys come in, and they come in with this huge box of meat they show me. And the meat has been – it appears to have been cut frozen by a bandsaw.
Oh.
Because you could see the cut marks, you know, it's like, you know, you can see, it's just like, and it was obviously frozen solid when they cut it, cutting these steaks and whatever. And I'm, and the price was outrageous. They were more expensive than the store, thinking, well, you're getting a better product because it's a, you know, grass fed off the hoof. You get people out there, it should be cheaper, not more expensive.
Well, plus it was frozen.
And it was frozen.
It's not even fresh meat. Now, they could say that it was flash frozen.
Oh, yeah.
But still, you know, meat when it's...
It could have been frozen. Work. It could have been shipped in from India, for all I know.
Right. Yep. Could have been horse.
Could have been.
Yep. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with this Tesla situation. But, like, I agree with you totally that nobody seems to really care. And they did get, you know, they met their market need when they said they were going to be have this profitability by the end of the year. So that was, you know, the check mark there. They made their 5,000 cars per week when they promised that. That was a check mark there. It almost looks like, you know, Elon Musk is doing everything that he can in order to create to create check boxes for the investment community.
There's a lot of the Model 3s in the Bay Area. And every time I see one, I just look at it. It looks like it should be on the water because of that stupid grill. There's no grill. It's just a... kind of a funny boat-looking front end.
Yeah, the duck boat.
Yeah, it's like a duck boat. I'm thinking, gee, this is the ugliest car. Why are people buying these things? I mean, get a Volt if you want tax credits. You know, get something else. I don't know why this. I don't know. It mystifies me.
Well, we'll see when some of these other cars come out by Mercedes, and I think Audi has one, and there's a couple other ones. Maybe Beamer's coming out with one soon. See how that all holds up, but definitely
Beamer does have one now. I mean,
it's expensive though.
It's very butt ugly. I'm talking about the boxy one. They also have a modern sleek looking thing that is just like, wow. But those things are very pricey.
I saw the Rolls Royce SUV the other day. It was actually parked in somebody's backyard because I was going to the boat show by boat. And it was actually interesting. I took my friend owns the water taxi down here. And so we set up a whole meeting with all these people to go to, about 100 of us, to go to a breakfast meeting at the boat show on one of those big catering boat kind of things, you know, party boats.
Yeah, big boat. Yeah.
So we had breakfast there. We brought in Guy Harvey to speak. He's a brilliant guy on conservation and knows all sorts of things about the ocean and marine life, really fat. And not just an artist, really just a really interesting dude. You know who he is, right?
Yeah, heard of him.
He's a
never met him.
Yeah, very interesting guy. I'll send you a picture of. I actually tweeted a picture of him and I. I think I have another one. All right, let's talk about Amazon. This is kind of weird. So Amazon, there was some kind of leak that the headquarters 2 or HQ 2, as they call it, is going to be possibly opening up in Crystal City, Virginia.
I don't believe there's such a thing as a leak at Amazon.
No. Although.
So this was leaked for a reason.
Although Bezos was supposedly scolding somebody. Did you see that? He scolded him. You bad boy. You bad girl. And so two people close to the process of Crystal City was selected, likely to move an initial group of 700 people to this area, to two different buildings. But supposedly now, there's also something going on in Potomac Yard in Alexandria. So there's going to be possibly a split deal, like two different sites. It's no longer just a single headquarters.
It's like somebody's doing real estate speculation.
That's exactly what it is. And with that in mind, when we saw this news come out about Crystal City, Virginia, and the broker and the company that's involved in it is actually publicly traded. JBGS is the symbol. That stock went up very nicely, about 6%, 7%. But when they talked about the secondary site, came back a little bit, maybe 3.5%, 4%. But that may be something to look at.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yep. In the ongoing discussion of whether these tariffs are, you know, becoming a problem, some interesting stats.
You mean the threats of tariffs?
No, there's tariffs on, but the tariffs, the threats of tariffs. We're seeing that exports from the U.S. to China of soybeans dropped 94%.
Huh.
That's not a small amount.
No, we were the major soybean makers, and we ship most of it to China.
I think it went to Brazil, or somebody else cut a deal right behind us. FedEx also says now they're going to be increasing shipping rates for several operating units as higher transportation costs and tight capacity.
It's so high now, it's outrageous. I can't use FedEx for anything.
I got a bill right here in front of me for FedEx. I'm going to open it up, okay? On the air. This is like an unboxing. Seriously.
Yeah.
Every time you send something, it comes faster than the thing gets delivered. This wasn't bad. This is $8. What'd I do? All right, let's see what I did. I shipped a box. It weighed 1 pound.
Oh.
From here to Tallahassee. $8. It was a letter for $8. Not bad.
It was a letter.
Yeah, a letter. $8. It was a FedEx Express Saver, 3-day envelope, not an overnight.
3 days. You can do that. The post office has the same thing. It's like a buck.
Yep. So $8. I'll pay that bill. Also, Lowe's is saying that it's going to close nearly 50 stores as a new CEO that just stepped in is going to be looking to boost sales. He's going to look to boost.
How do you boost sales by closing stores?
I need to read this in slow motion so everybody gets this. They're closing 50 stores in order to boost sales. How ridiculous is that?
I mean, maybe to boost earnings.
Right, boost earnings. And the end part of the sentence is to boost sales by shedding less profitable locations and focus spending elsewhere.
Sure. So I guess if you close the store and triple the sales in this competing store nearby,
yeah,
you can make that argument. But that's not the way. I know where Lowe's are. They're spread out all over the place. They really don't compete with each other, I don't think. I mean, I know there's one. There's two around where I am, and both of them are too far away. I mean, it's a trek to go to either one, so I know they can't. And I'm in the middle, so I know they're not competing with each other. It doesn't make sense.
This is, if it does work, let's say that somehow magically this works.
It's not going to work, but go on.
We will do something here. We are going to stop podcasting to get new listeners. Is that the same thing?
Yeah.
We're going to stop doing the podcast to increase our listenership. Sounds good to me.
Should work.
Yeah. Now, last week we talked about the Rasmussen poll, the poll that you had cited, I think said that President Trump now had a 50% approval rating.
Yeah.
So what I thought I would do is bring the Real Clear Politics summation poll, which looks at Rasmussen and all the different polls that are out there, whether we believe them or not, it's a different story, and creates a single poll out of all of them to see what's going on with the presidential approval ratings.
Yeah.
So currently if you take all these, again, the average of all these, his low was back in the beginning of 2008. And it's been steadily climbing since. He's not back up to as high as it was when he first got into office. That was about, 46?
My memory doesn't seem to serve me well. When he first got into office, his approval rating, and they just harped on it on all the news shows, was in 30% and headed down.
It depends on what you look at. You know,
I almost made bets with guys who said it was going to go below 25.
It did get down to 35 or something like that.
I think it was 33, maybe 35.
Yeah, and then it's been climbing. It's a decent looking chart. It looks like a crash and then a uptick, a little bit of a low down in the beginning of.
Yeah, it looks like a bogus. I mean, the approval rating shouldn't be fluctuating like a market bottom. Doesn't make sense.
And what do people like polled all the time? What do you think of Trump? Good. What do you think of Trump? What do you think of Trump? I don't like him. What do you think of Trump? I like him. What is that, like once a week you got to get? It's so it's ridiculous. And don't forget, people are also going to be voting with their pocketbooks. The stock market goes up, they're happy. Stock market goes down, they're miserable.
I think so.
So you see that in the beginning of 2008, it kind of, you know, started climbing up, and then it started rolling over a little bit when the market rolled down, and then it kind of picked up again, and then it looks just like the stock market.
It's like another coincident index.
Exactly. So let's throw that away. Berkshire Hathaway stock jumped on Monday after Warren Buffett's investment arm disclosed a big jump in third quarter profits and, more importantly, going to be buying back stocks first time in 6 years, about $900 million buyback plan.
I didn't know that they ever did it.
That's kind of like, it's like eating yourself with that. You know what I'm saying? It's like a mutual fund buying back shares somehow. The whole thing is weird. He only buys it back in certain circumstances when his value is below a particular book value ratio or something like that. So I guess it either got there or he just said, the hell with it. Let's just play along. Which I think the second is probably more likely.
The market takes off like a rocket. I did interview Anthony Scaramucci, who runs a hedge fund.
You interviewed him where?
I over the Skype for the No Agenda show.
Oh.
And I talked to him about the market.
I know the mooch.
Yeah.
We use one of his products. He's actually runs a hedge fund, a hedge called SkyBridge.
Right, SkyBridge. And I asked him because I told him what our thinking was about the market. Is it a bottom or is it a high top or a high bottom or just going to roll over and drop dead? And he's just as bullish as anybody.
Well, he gets paid to be bullish. That's first of all. You know,
he should be on CNBC.
I just had their people in my office. And he's been to my office. He's been on my podcast. He's back at the helm of SkyBridge after the company was going to be taken out by HNA, and he, you know, when he was going to get into office and obviously get the tax-free deal on it, and then that didn't work, and HNA had problems, so that deal's off. Everything's back to where it was. I will tell you though, first of all, it's a hedge fund. There's you can't just get into it with $50. So we have this for a particular type of client that we use it for. You know, usually it's about a $250,000 minimum at least in there, if not more. And
you can get a piece of that hedge fund for $25,000.
Can you get that one for SkyBridge for $25,000?
As far as I know, because he wrote a book about how it should be more approachable to the small investor.
But you still have to have a high net worth. You have to get...
Well, that could be.
You have to do all this other stuff. And not to mention, the signing documents are enormous. It's like the Bible.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, and we had to go through all of that. That was pretty intense. Although it's performing pretty well. Actually, this year has been one of the better years for what they do. It's not a go-go type of hedge fund. It's a slow and steady wins the race kind of hedge fund.
He claims they do 9%.
They're up 6% this year.
Yeah.
And they've averaged 6%. I just looked at the long-term track record, about 6% a year. The last 10 years on average.
Sounds reasonable.
Yeah. So you don't have guests very often on the No Agenda show. What sparked that?
We never have guests.
That wasn't about a
guest. That was a standalone interview. When we take vacations,
we
run these interviews.
Gotcha.
So that didn't run on the show yet. I mean, that'd be probably, we don't know, but it depends on the timing for Thanksgiving, and maybe Thanksgiving or maybe that Sunday.
Oh, if you need a stand-in, you know, I can be a stand-in. I can push the buttons. I'll just push the buttons and make sounds.
Well, we give you the sound effect board and you just make sounds for 3 hours.
That's all I'll do. Let's push buttons. Anyway, in Miami, there's some interesting things that are going on. The majority of new condos in Miami and the beaches that sold so far this year traded at a loss to their original developer sales price. So there was all these properties they took a look at. And
wow.
There's some interesting things.
This is Florida.
Yeah.
This happens all the time.
All the time. People never learn. Developers keep on. I always say developers are like puppies. Puppies will eat until they puke. Developers will build till they bankrupt themselves.
Or puke.
That's true. After identifying 102 units that sold in the first three quarters of 2018, it found that 64 of them, or 63%, sold for less than their original purchase price. Now, remember something. This looks like a flip deal. So people are looking to buy before the deal gets done. They put their money up, they buy the condo, and they're looking to flip it once it becomes inhabitable. And it seems that about 78% of the people that did this lost money. The Porsche Design Tower, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, you have an elevator for your car that comes up to your apartment.
That's cool.
Yeah. Unit 4405, I don't know why we're identifying that, was originally bought for $11.8 million in 2017 and sold for $7.4 million in August 2018.
That doesn't sound like much of an investment.
No, it's not good. Not a good investment. So there's an oversupply of inventory. Here's the really interesting thing. So based on the price, on the pace of sales over the past 6 months and the 1,840 new condos listed for sale, there's 81-month supply of inventory. And a normal market should be 12 months. So something is awry.
That is not good.
No. But we do, you know this. I the other day I tweeted a picture of all these cranes in Fort Lauderdale. I'm like, you know, it's not looking, this is one shot, one area. There's like five cranes in my viewing area.
Yeah.
It was, no big deal, five cranes. I'm like, no, but you don't understand. It's like a little viewing area, what I took a picture of. And, but you can see that the construction is out of control.
Yeah, it's almost that way here. I don't know if they're ever going to manage to fill Salesforce Tower.
It's still not fully.
Well, I don't know. I've never been over, but I just don't see how it could be. There's excessive office space in San Francisco.
Yeah, but and the prices keep on going higher. But
and it's like the New York thing where they're
right.
In fact, I'm noticing this around here too, not just New York, but I notice in a Rock Ridge area of Oakland and some other places, there's these empty storefronts that are good traffic, lots of people walking by, and the things are, you know, for lease, but they're not even strong signage. It's like they don't even want to lease them. I don't know what people are expecting, but I don't think this boom they're expecting is going to be a long-lasting one.
It can't. It's a standard. Not to break it down to just the basics, but supply and demand. And when you have too much supply or too little demand, prices sink. And that becomes cyclical, as you know. It's a natural process. It happens all the time. It will happen all the time. We go from boom to bust, from trough to, you know, to peak and back again. It's the way things go.
And that's why a socialist centralized planning is the way to do it.
And universal income, of course. Yep. All right, let's just go quickly because we have a lot of things to talk about. We'll have another Close to the Pin coming up soon. Please donate to the show. I'm not going to go on at length about this, but it does help the show. Only a few more weeks left to get your signed copy of the DH Unplugged t-shirt with myself, and John will sign it. It will say 430 on it. That's for this week. It's $430. You know, do us a favor. Do yourself a favor. Help us out. Go over to the show page. Go over to DH Unplugged. Click on the donate button. The donut button of donating. And especially because this next story that I want to talk to you about. If you like this next story, you should donate. And it has to do with chickens.
Chickens.
There's a company called Just. I think this is the same company that made that weird mayonnaise that the guy was...
I remember. The guy went and bought the mayonnaise.
Yeah, remember that?
To boost sales.
Yeah, it was like Just Mayo. It's a company called Just. So instead of raising a whole chicken for slaughter, they found it possible to pop a feather in a machine and grow a chicken nugget. Seriously.
Yeah. I guess no one said bullshit to this.
Well, I don't know. I saw the video and I'm like, so this is what they said. I'm not kidding.
This is bull crap.
You got to watch this video because he says, what we did was we thought it was possible. We wanted to find something that could really find the best cells to use in this process. So we looked around the farm to find a really good looking chicken. I'm not kidding about this. A good looking, one that has like just, you know, wonderfully preened feathers and just, you know, good overall balance and walked well and all that. And we found that chicken. We took his feather. And we took the feather and we then put a piece of the feather into this thing and into this solution. And then they like showed you these vegetables of some sort. And like we had to feed it so it can grow. And we made it in 2 days. They make a nugget. Are they kidding?
Yeah. Yeah. If they made a nugget in 2 days, it's probably that it was had to be cancerous chicken cells so they could grow that.
Well, they
fast.
Said it was just natural. You saw all them sitting around a picnic table eating their feather raised nugget bites.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess there's a sucker born every minute.
I guess, but it's funny if it is the same company, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that was still one of the funniest stories of the year is the guy who buying his own mayonnaise.
Buying my own mayonnaise. Let's see, rounding them up in Tanzania. It started. In the end of October, the regional commissioner announced plans to form an interagency task force comprising of members of the Tanzania Communications Regulatory Authority to identify and arrest gay people in the country. So the task force is expected to begin hunting down and arresting people who are or are perceived to be lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex. What's intersex?
I should know, and I don't offhand.
Is that a binary blah, 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 blah?
It's hard. Yes.
Asexual, binary, something?
Yeah, pansexual, and whatever.
Yeah. So just listen, anybody that's listening to the show right now is a little bit down on whether you get your election results that you wanted. Think for just a moment it could be worse living somewhere else.
Well, if I lived in Tanzania, I would just stay home.
Yeah, you don't know who they're going to come out with. Next, they're going to be arresting podcasters.
Well, that's long overdue.
It's going to be the Tanzania Communication Regulatory Authority Podcast Division. Here's a couple of things otherwise that I thought was also interesting. And questioning how this happens, because I know you know about these kind of Navy ships and all that. The $13 billion Gerald R. Ford aircraft carrier. Well, this is funny because now that I think about it, wasn't he also very clumsy and had all sorts of like issues? And
yeah, he fell a lot, even though he was an athlete in college.
So it was delivered last year without the elevators needed to lift bombs from the below deck magazines for loading on fighter jets. And those things aren't light.
No.
They weigh thousands of pounds. So somehow there was other problems. There was 11 elevators for the ship built by this Huntington Eagles. There was reliability problems, the electromagnetic system to launch planes and the arrest gear to catch them when they land. $13 billion and they couldn't get any of this right. For a boat.
Whatever happened to Litton Industries? Didn't they used to be able to do this sort of thing the right way?
Weren't they the first company that made the radar range? The microwave oven?
Yeah, I think that's a good catch. Right? I think so. Because I remember when I was working as a kid, one summer when you used to be able to get jobs at International Harvester, they had one of those early radar ranges in the lunchroom.
Yeah.
And by the way, which I thought was interesting, there was something different about it because you could put aluminum, like a Swanson's TV dinner into that thing and turn it on and it wouldn't spark or do anything weird. It would just cook it.
Yeah. And it was fast. It was heavy.
It was very fast.
And they were big.
Yes, they were very huge.
And finally, on there's a new – this is troubling to me. There's the idea that spanking is now equated to corporal punishment. So the American Academy of Pediatrics said Monday that parents should not spank their children in a strongly worded policy statement, warning against the harmful effects of corporal punishment in the home.
Yeah, saw this.
So the group, which represents about 67,000 doctors, also recommended that pediatricians advise parents against the use of spanking, which is defined as non-injurious, open-handed hitting with the intention of modifying child behavior, and said to avoid using non-physical punishment that is humiliating, scary, or threatening. So I'm not allowed to, like, so how about this? What if you do something wrong and am I not allowed to adjust your allowance or take away your allowance anymore? Is that like a guaranteed deal?
I can't
raise my voice. I mean, how ridiculous is all this? What's the matter with people?
They don't have kids.
They have kids. They're just ridiculous. We've gotten so ridiculous. The problem is that the people that can't handle some of this stuff are the people that grow up not being able to handle this stuff.
Can't handle anything.
Can't handle anything.
Yeah. They can't handle Trump getting elected.
Yeah, they get crazy. I mean, I don't agree with outright wailing on your child. You know what I'm saying? But a little tap on the tuchus, a little something, you know, sometimes it gets their attention. And they don't do anything.
Sometimes their attention needs to be got.
Yeah. You can't humiliate them. I guess that's not nice. You can't threaten or do something that's threatening. If you don't do this, I'm going to... When I grew up, if I did something wrong and it was really bad, when I was little, my dad said, listen, I'm getting the cat of nine tails. You ever hear the cat of nine tails?
He has a whip.
It's a whip of some sort, right? I saw a picture of it. I saw some of it. And he said the cat of nine tails. I'm like, all right, I'm good. I stopped doing whatever I was doing. One time, my kids were really bad and I walked over to I said, my twins, I said, you two are being horrible. I said something to them and I walked over to like the closet and I said, you know, I said something and they go, oh, they looked up and they saw like a book in the closet. Okay. And they go, not the book. I'm like, what? What are they talking about? Right. They go, no, Dad, not the book. I'm like thinking, what book? What are they talking about with this? For years, I was able to use that whole book thing. I'm going to get the book. Stop whatever they were doing.
What was that about?
I don't know. They kind of made up something about a book or something like that. That the book was this horrible thing that I would put them in or something, or I would hit them with. I don't know. They made it up totally. I'm like, and I just ran with it. Got to get the book.
Fascinating.
Yep. More fascinating though is what you would have had written for PC Magazine if you were to be writing for PC Magazine.
Yeah, I would have written about the real reason Apple is not going to give their numbers out anymore. Some speculations about what's ahead.
I don't even know what that means.
Well, you'd have to read the column.
But I can't read the column.
But it's all in there.
You know, see,
that's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a problem. Yeah. Maybe you should start your own magazine.
Yeah, well, if I get a backer, I would.
Okay. Well, let's take a look at the stock picks. This is a game that we play. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell any securities. Nothing more than just simply some fun that we have looking at some ideas, what they could mean, what they could possibly do. John C. Dvorak, myself, Horowitz Company clients may own any of the stocks that are mentioned. And of course, if you decide for whatever reason that you want to play along, go see financial advice. There's somebody professional that can help you along with this. Do your research. We are not responsible at all for any of your losses.
Well, we have the list today has nothing taken off, and we still have a strong, couple of strong stocks on here. 23% up for the Walgreens Boots pick.
Unbelievable.
Which is a gem, and that goes in probably in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that is a Hall of Famer. That is definitely a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I think so. And you got a couple. We had the two shorts that we had long term are both gone up. The Voodoo one from Salesforce is up, and so is your MBIA, which is kind of a short. It's a municipal bonds thing. You're doing a short of some sort.
Right, so these guys are the rating service. They came out with earnings tonight. They missed by 38 cents. So hopefully
nice
tomorrow's going to be a good day.
Nailed it. Mm-hmm. And then I have two gut shorts, which you put on there, but they haven't done. They're both down 4.5%. Which is Amazon and Netflix. And so I'm going to go all in. I'm going to short Tesla.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I got the big three up there shorted.
Yep. There you go. And what's your thesis?
I'll keep it on the same level, a gut short. It's just it's a gut feeling. These are not as good, by the way, picks generally speaking as my insider stuff, but
right.
You never know.
Yep. All right, we have a gut short here. I have one. You have any other ones?
No, it's just it.
I have one. I'm going back to one of my favorites, Tempur Sealy International Mattress Company.
Yeah, your mattress is one of your favorites nowadays.
So there's only a few companies left. One of them recently went bankrupt.
You rely on the mattresses.
I'm not going to rest my laurels on that, but I'm going to move on. So, yeah, I think a short on this would be very interesting. If the housing market is, in fact, slowing down.
Oh, this is a good one. Oh, I see what you're good. Oh, that's nice. I like it.
You know, and if, in fact, one of the ways that they sell these mattresses is on credit, and even though more people are working and all that, but possibly credit's getting a little sketchy, And if they're not going to want to put out that much more credit, if in fact we are going into a slowdown in the economic spectrum, maybe.
I think you'd also add if the Fed's going to raise interest rates, it's going to make the crunch a little worse. Yep. And then people aren't going to buy the new mattress for the new house.
Right.
They may actually move their old mattress to the new house.
Yep.
Heaven forbid.
Yeah. So that's all I got there. Let me Let me highlight this. The gut short.
I like if I ever get a bunch of shorts.
Yeah, it should play out unless the market just goes, you know, bananas to the upside here.
Well, it could go crazy if Trump doesn't lose the House.
Yep, exactly. All right, I will talk to you next week, sir.
All right, sounds good. Right. Tuesday.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.